welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soups. Time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe, please rate and review the program. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. We originally did tweet out the programming note that we were going to get Garrett Temple on for today, but due to unforeseen circumstances, Garrett actually will not be joining us on this show today. Hopefully, we'll catch up with him tomorrow and just sort of, you know, get his sense on what's going on with the team. But
So later in the show, though, we'll get the star of last night's game, or probably the most like newsworthy participant in last night's game. Mo G's coming on. Mohamedou Gay will join us around 3 o'clock. Obviously, not the smoothest of performances last night, but the first time he's played in an NBA game outside of garbage time. So this time of year, that ranks as the number one item from the Raptors' 34 point loss to the Kings last night. Got down by as many as 38.
I did have the concern and the worry that, like, are we going to have a 50-point loss at home at one point?
This has happened too often this year.
Yeah.
I had the list up of worst Raptors losses. 46 is still the worst, and worst individual plus minuses in a game is one that I always bring up too, just to see if anyone can get there. No one threatened it last night. Minus 22 was the worst of anyone. But
everyone was a minus across the board.
Yeah, but everyone on the roster right now is currently threatening like the career record for worst plus minus as a Raptor.
Yeah, this is it's a tough season.
Jalen McDaniels, you will make history.
He will make history for sure. Wow. But in any case, we do move on. We'll talk about this game where the Raptors lost to Sacramento last night. I think the bigger story, honestly, was just hearing from Jordy Fernandez before the game and all the discussion around Canada basketball. There was a lot of Canada basketball. Actually, pretty much everybody, obviously, except for Rowan, who was dealing with tragedy. But, like, everybody around the program was kind of there, and it was actually great to sort of just catch up with some people. But in any case, Raptors lose to the Kings last night. Starting lineup for this group, Bruce Brown played point guard because Emmanuel Quickley continues to be out. And
which was kind of what we figured when we teed it up yesterday, and then Ramsey and JFL is kind of the co-backup point guards.
Right. And so when you see that, you're obviously going to have such a deficit in playmaking. And, of course, you can maybe try to see if other guys have something else. And I think that was the big takeaway for watching the game for me was you saw Gary really try to extend his game. Ochai even to some degree extend his game. Grady really try to extend his game. And there just wasn't much else to extend. What did you see from the game last night?
Yeah, again, I'm with you. You know, Gary still has the scoring there. Not the most efficient of nights because he was probably the number one guy on the scouting report. Maybe Kelly. But
I would have loved to see Sacramento scouting report from yesterday.
Yeah, it's Jordy Fernandez just being like, I got the KO, I got the Kelly Olynyk stuff covered. You guys deal with everything else. And like, look, the way an offense is going to be orchestrated, we talked about it yesterday. It's like, okay, there are no point guards. Bruce Brown will handle the ball a little bit more, but the Raptors want to play through their bigs more. So maybe it's a night where you're going to play more through Kelly Olynyk and play more through Jonte Porter. Well, Jonte Porter also left this game after 3 minutes. He was ill and was like on the fence about playing in the first place.
Right.
And then he tried to give it a go and couldn't. So then suddenly not only do you not have a point guard on the roster because Jamias Ramsey and Javon Freeman Liberty are both, you know, more off guards than point guards, but you also are down another playmaking big who you can at least run some DHO stuff through, some high post stuff through, which you can't really do with Mo G. We even saw Jalen McDaniels at the five at one point last night. So I really do think this was a case of, not only were Gary and Ochai and Grady trying to expand theirs, but like the secondary options in all those lineups just aren't there when you're this thin on talent, you're this thin on ball handling talent. So, you know, we know at this point that's not a natural part of Gary's game, getting other people involved. He's much better getting his own shot, which is a really valuable skill, but getting others involved, creating for others is not something he's going to do very well. I thought Bruce did an okay job of it.
Yeah.
You know, he continues to be a little bit of a square peg in a round hole, or actually not even a square peg in a round hole, a peg that is a good size, but the hole the Raptors are dealing with is a canyon right now.
Yeah, nobody's going to fill these gaps, for sure. Yeah.
From a playmaking perspective, honestly, Grady probably had the highlight with that cool spin pass around a defender for Bruce Brown on the cut, but I thought Grady had a pretty shaky night overall at both ends of the floor, so not a lot of positive to take from that one, which shouldn't be surprising. It was their biggest halftime deficit of the season, and this is a season where they've been down 10 plus, 20 plus a lot in the first half.
Yeah.
And then, a game that was like a 40-point game at by the end of the third quarter. It was thin on positives last night.
After halftime, I went to sit with some friends in the stands First off, the friends texted me, hey, there's some empty seats beside us.
Now, were these seats, or was this in a suite where you could get in on that all you can eat as well?
Please, Blake, I say with the people, all right? This is a day one Raptor fan, okay, season ticket holder type of deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't up in the Sprite zone. You were down lower bowl.
Well, typically when I sit in the media zone, as you know, I'm in the 600s.
We're higher than the Sprite zone. We're the Sprite zero zone.
That's actually crazy. I see the Sprite zone every time we come out of the elevator. But in any case, you know, they texted me. They're like, hey, come sit down for the game. There's some empty seats. And I came down. And, you know, as soon as I got down there, and there was like probably 2 minutes into the third quarter, I saw a dad and his kid just like Kobe style, just pick up and leave. They're like, nah.
That's got to be such. So neither of us have kids.
I was only like 8:30.
I know. Neither of us have kids. One thing that I've like joked about with friends who do have kids as I get into that age bracket is, you know, something. So this was more Jays games. I didn't go to Raptors games until I was in university. But when I would go to Jays games with my dad as a kid, you're driving in 90 minutes from out of town. The absolute, like, if you were ranking the best things that could possibly happen for a father-son duo at a game that you drove into town for, it's like, okay, you see a perfect game, you see a walk-off, but like just ahead of those things are you get a really good parking spot and you leave early to beat traffic. So there are some dads out there who last night they would have been rubbing their hand. They got Birdman going of like, I can convince my kid to leave by the end of the third quarter. We're going to beat that Gardner traffic.
I think some fans were able to. You know when you tap on your Presto and you got a 2-hour transfer limit? I think some fans could have gone in at home.
Yeah.
On the same ticket. But yeah, I mean, that was the style of game, unfortunately. And I mean, I think with Grady, the one thing is like, for the other, I guess to some degree, we don't necessarily know as much about Ochai because he only joined us for half the year so far. But in these games, at least there is a bit of an opportunity to see if there's a little more playmaking. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just like definitive and clear that like there was no additional playmaking with that group. And so this is not a concern. Grady's role is to be a catch and shoot guy, to be a finisher. We're not expecting him to create. But, you know, when you're thinking long term in terms of his growth and his development, is that something you would like to see added to his game or at least show more signs that he can do something off the dribble? Because I feel like he does very little off the dribble.
Yeah, there's enough there that I can think on, you know, okay, when he's playing around better players and, you know, he becomes even more of a threat on the scouting report and guys are closing out more aggressively. You know, like you said, I'm not envisioning a scenario next year where they're running a ton of, you know, Grady, Scotty pick and roll, right? Like, I don't need that from him right now. What I do need is whether you're on the corner or whether you're on the wing, if that closeout scrambles out to you, it's a wild closeout or the closeout's there in time, can you beat that? Right. Can you either beat that with the intention of getting to the rim or making the next pass? And early in the season, one of the things that was frustrating about his struggles is in training camp and in the first couple games, he actually showed a decent knack for that. I can attack a closeout, but then once the three-point shot wasn't there, and I think he says no, but I think you know probably the confidence dropped a little bit. It was a lot of, well, I'm going to take that step and maybe I travel because I'm in my head a little bit. I'm rushing things. Mm-hmm. And then it was, well, I'm going to take this like 14-foot floater. That's not really a good shot for me yet. And that's something that I think has improved. Yeah. It's probably gone back the other direction the last couple games here, the 9 games without Scotty Barnes, because again, Grady's gone from being, you know, on the scouting report to a complete afterthought to now being item number 2 or 3 on the scouting report. Mm-hmm. You know, even if the way these scouting reports, the ones I've seen or talked to people about in the past, is even if you are not, you know, the best player, a guy who is a movement shooter and does a lot of stuff off the ball, those guys tend to be higher on the scouting report because there's more things you have to be aware of. Like JJ Redick was not the 76ers' second or third best player in that playoff series in 2019, but he was high on the scouting report because you have to be hyper aware of so much stuff JJ Redick is doing. Right. Grady's dealing with a little bit of that too. I think he's shown enough to think that by next year, with better players around him where he's not getting as much one-on-one attention, you know, hey, knocking down the three is the most important thing, but the ball isn't going to stop with me. It's not going to swing to me. And if the three's not there, everything dies. I think he's shown he can be, you know, he can apply those 0.5 principles and put it on the floor, not to get to the rim. That's not there yet. A little bit out of the corner. He does have a little bit of baseline juice.
Yeah, sure. We've seen him do a couple reverse layups, stuff like that.
There's a little bit there. There's enough to build on. And then the bigger challenge will be when those are wing looks, You know, especially you come off a pin down or it's a screen, the screener, so your momentum's going in the wrong direction. Yeah. And Gary's really good at this, coming off a pin down and then immediately changing direction to get back toward the paint as he catches the ball. You know, can you do that? And then can you make the next read? Can you pick out a corner shooter? Can you, you know, get into the next action? That's the kind of stuff he'll have to build on from here. I thought more than the playmaking was just, the Kings aren't even as big as the Magic, and I thought it was another...
Oh, they just crushed them.
I thought it was another night where he really struggled with the physicality.
Right. I mean, I think his assignment last night was a lot of Harrison Barnes or guys like that, and they were just scoring over the top of him, you know, and they were very confident looking to attack him. I think that's something where he, for sure, he just needs to get stronger.
Mm-hmm. Even Keegan Murray, like, Keegan Murray is...
He's
6'8". And so, like, him and Grady...
No, but he's, like, clearly bigger and stronger than him, yeah.
And, like, he's only got, like, an inch, maybe inch and a half on Grady, but he is, like, solid. Like, and he's a small 6'8".
Right.
When he's playing the forward positions, he's, like, you know... So even a guy like that who is, you know, not... He's not Harrison Barnes. Like, Harrison Barnes bodying Grady Dick a little bit in those situations, I completely understand. Harrison Barnes is a vet. He's got the old man strength.
Sure,
he knows how to take advantage of that. But even Keegan Murray, who's on the, like... not shorter end, but like he's not that physical type of offensive player yet.
Right.
He's more of a perimeter oriented guy. Even he was able to, you know, take it. And I know he only had 10 points, but there are a couple examples of the physicality being pretty clear there.
This got me thinking that if an opposing player would like to go viral involving Grady, hitting the too small celebration on him would be actually an incredible thing to do.
Yeah.
But no, I think my general question was just like, do you want to see, or is there any expectation from you? Because what you're describing is Grady can really score within a system.
Mm-hmm.
It can be effective in this particular system, which is the most important part. Do you want? Are you expecting anything of him getting his own shot?
Not yet. No.
Okay, not right now, but maybe in the future.
Yeah, eventually. Like, okay. If he's going to deliver, you know, look, honestly, if you're the 13th, or he went 13th? If you're the 13th overall 13th. Pick, like, if you become a high-end shooting specialist, like, that's a decent return on that.
For
but
sure.
If you're going to be the, hey, we're talking about you as part of the Scotty Barnes, Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett core, if that is going to be, you know, the ceiling that you reach, then yeah, you're going to have some self-creation ability.
Because even like Gary, for example, has like a bit of self-creation. It's just not particularly efficient, so they don't go to it that often.
Right. And it's
but he has something.
Gary, especially like lately, we've seen it a lot. Like I think I mentioned yesterday just how good Gary's scoring's been and how necessary, like 20 points a game since Scotty went down on like reasonable efficiency, given he's the number one option some nights. And it's like, a step back long two is not a great shot for Gary Trent Jr., but when there's 5 seconds on the shot clock and the ball swings to him, being able to get off any shot that has even like a 40% chance of going in is a pretty good thing to have. So Grady's not there yet. Eventually, he's going to need to, whether it's pick and roll, whether it's, you know, hey, you're going to have a lesser defender on you because we're going to put you in the corner sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be there. I do think the handle is good enough, and like he has an ability to kind of probe against the defender. He's not a bad dribbler. You know, we see he's not
never over dribbles.
Yeah, and he doesn't have like a high dribble, like one of those ones you'd expect to get picked off a lot if he you know, if he's on the left wing and he attacks a closeout to his right side and someone, you know, pinches in at the nail or something like that.
Right.
Like I don't think he has the type of dribble that's going to be too prone to get picked off there, but he's going to have to get one of two things is, okay, well, the pull-up package has to get there, so you're not just a catch-and-shoot guy, and that's how you, you know, come off the screens or come out and things like that. Or you've got to get stronger so that when you do attack a closeout, you're a threat to finish in the paint. And that's not there yet, and I don't think anyone expected that to be there yet coming into the year, especially, you know, you look at late December when they're like, hey, we got to do the conditioning stint for a couple weeks. We got to get this guy's body closer to NBA ready. You know, that's going to be something that takes a little bit of time, but that's going to be the biggest thing for me. Even if it's not creating for yourself necessarily, but being able to take, you know, what was a small advantage and get to the rim with the ball in your hands instead of as a cutter or something like that. That'll have to come eventually. I think he's a couple steps away from that right now, though.
Okay, what about Ochai? So we see Ochai for 30 minutes, 5 of 10, more efficient. I think he had 8 points of his 13 in the first quarter, in the first, like, shift. He made a couple of plays, I think. What's your overall assessment on Ochai so far? Because he's a guy where, even though he's young and he's been inconsistent, I think it's pretty clear that he's going to be part of the Raptors' rotation the rest of the season, obviously, and going forward as well.
Yeah, he's someone, I mean, this is for the offseason development. Like, he obviously has a lot of physical tools, and those have not manifested yet in an ability to finish inside the paint or go up strong in the paint. When they first acquired him, the scouting report I kind of gave was he's a pretty solid transition offensive player, but in the half court, if he's not hitting his corner threes, he's offering you next to nothing. Mm. He was a little bit better than that last night. But for the most part, as a Raptor, yeah, I feel like that scouting report's been pretty accurate.
No, he's averaging 6 points a game, shooting 38% from the field 38%. As a Raptor.
And yeah. I'd imagine his – I know he missed, like, his first six or seven corner threes. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine that number's come up. But overall, what's his three-point percentage?
26.
Yeah. So that's – you know, you see it. And that's actually weirdly not as big a deal right now because, like – the offense is going to be bad no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, if he were getting these minutes in the act, what we thought, you know, post-trade, what we thought Scotty in the bench would be, Brown, Olynyk, Grady, and Ochai, mm-hmm. then it would be really important for him to hit those corner threes because those lineups are supposed to be competitive and things like that.
Yeah.
In this environment, I mean, I guess there's at least a little bit of freedom for him to do some stuff and try to attack the paint, but the handle is really, really shaky. The kind of... you know, having...
I don't think it's shaky. I think he just doesn't do anything when he dribbles.
Yeah, that's a better way to say it.
Even
yeah.
like Grady, when he takes one or two of those dribbles and he described kind of like probing the defense, see who reacts and then making the next pass. Like, it feels like it's done with a purpose. I feel like Ochai can handle, but he doesn't present any threat.
Right.
So he doesn't elicit a reaction and he just resets.
But, which yeah. is, you know, in what this offense is supposed to be, that's death, right? It's
right,
like
exactly,
the ball swings to you and you, instead of making that next pass or dribble or shot, mm-hmm. you let the defense reset because you're surveying things. And some of that is processing. Some of that is he hasn't had the ball in his hand a lot and things like that. But some of it is also like, what are your moves? Like, what do you have?
Yeah, what's in your bag? Exactly.
And he showed a little bit more of that in college. And this was kind of, again, when they acquired him, part of the perplexing thing to me is, he showed a little bit more in college than he's shown in the NBA, but that's against college players, right?
He was like more of a primary player when he played for Kansas,
yeah.
or he eventually got there?
Yeah, I mean, he still didn't have like a boatload of unassisted, you know, buckets at the rim and stuff like that, but he was certainly higher volume and higher efficiency.
Okay.
And this is a guy who, like, in Utah, like, almost none of his field goal attempts mm-hmm. were self-created. The Raptors are letting him do that a little bit more, but the results haven't been very good. I would say the one thing he's doing a better job of, considering that he has the ball in his hands a little bit more, is he's gotten to the paint at a decent rate with the Raptors.
Yeah,
he just,
has.
Again, given his physical advantages, he is not finishing very well there at all.
I think he jumps too far out.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of those attempts where I'm just like, if he took one more dribble, but I think he's like very anxious when he gets into the paint and he's like, okay, I got a chance to score. Like
almost the slasher version of where Quickly prefers the floater to getting to the rim. He wants to get into that push shot, lean out, protect the ball shot versus getting right to the paint or right to the rim.
With that, that's a great idea because with Quickly, like we saw him eventually work towards getting there. And of course, Quickly is a much more like skilled offensive player in terms of when you're talking about what's in your bag. Obviously, Quickly is a lot more, but we did see in season Quickly make that adjustment from, okay, he's not scoring in the paint and it's weird to, you know, the last couple of games, especially when he has been taking over as the number one option. He's been getting to the paint quite a bit and finishing there too. So I'm hoping for a similar-ish trajectory with Ochai, but
it's tough.
Yeah.
It's always tough to project a guy like Ochai too, because obviously in NBA terms, he's not that old. This is his second season, mm-hmm. but he was kind of an older prospect. He played 4 years at a major program in a pretty big role in the later years of that. And he's now played like 127 NBA games fully in the rotation. So terms of the reps he's gotten, if you go back to when he first started college, this is a guy who's had a lot of opportunity. Now, we also haven't seen him with the summer in the Raptors offense or the Raptors development system. Maybe that means something to some guys sometimes. It hasn't helped other guys. So we'll see. But for me, I mean, look, my outlook on Ochai and what his potential role for this team could be over the next 2 years that he's still under contract is not sky high anyway. Like there are very few scenarios where I'm going to be expecting him to create his own bucket, but he absolutely has to get better at, if you get to the paint, whether as a cutter or a crasher or because, you know, you attack the seam or whatever, you've got to finish if you're getting there. That the corner three has to be a weapon because it's just like, once this team is playing meaningful basketball again, like, look at how, I mean, the media game today where I'll give you a hint about our defensive strategy right now. We're not going to care about any of you guys from the three-point line, from the NBA three-point line. Once they're back to playing meaningful basketball, like you can't have, you know, we talk about how good a guy is defensively, but what come playoff basketball, for example, it's not how good are you defensively. It's not who's the best defender. It's who's the best defender who is good enough offensively that you can keep them on the floor.
Yeah,
and right. That'll be the challenge for him as the Raptors get back to being more competitive. You know, it's one thing to be a cutter and a crasher around the bucket. Mm-hmm. Yes, his finishing needs to be better there, but you know, you can't sink the spacing and not knock down those corner threes as well. This seems overly negative, but like he has a ways to go. Basically he was who I thought he was when they acquired him, which is still like a really nice defensive prospect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a long way to go offensively still.
Yeah. By the way, I'm enjoying the fact that he's obviously come to Toronto in that trade with Utah, with Kelly Olynyk, and Kelly did set him up quite a bit in Utah as well. But I did look up the numbers while your last answer, and he's taken 113 field goal attempts as a Raptor. 26 of those field goal attempts are directly off of passes from Kelly Olynyk.
Wow.
That's like a quarter of your offense is Kelly feeding you is quite impressive. Yeah, I mean, yesterday was actually a better game for him. Defensively, I feel like, again, I like what he does offensively. It's just like it's not enough. Again, it's the same thing as the Bruce Brown thing. The problem is too big for anybody to really try to address.
And like the Paolo games were good examples, right? Where it's like Ochai is effortful. Mm-hmm. Eric Green tweeted the stat that in the second Magic game, he spent more possessions guarding Paolo Banchero than any one-on-one matchup in the entire NBA this year. Been that locked one-on-one. And they were even changing their substitution patterns to make sure he was out there. That's a great test for him. That's a great learning thing like that. But like, Paolo was able to get his and adjust over the course of those two games.
Yeah.
But
you don't think he's like too small to be a defensive specialist?
I don't. I mean, against like Paolo sized point forwards, he might be, but he's also quite strong.
No, but you know, like that's part of being a defensive specialist. It's like you can't be a even if it's a mismatch, you fight to like somehow neutralize that mismatch.
You have to be in the current NBA, you kind of have to be a three position defender minimum if you're going to talk about yourself as a defensive stopper. And I think right now he's like very comfortable in a 2-3, mm-hmm. and then probably has the tools to get to a 1-4 in time. Yeah. But like, you know,
I mean, it'd be interesting if you could really guard ones. Then all of a sudden that changes a lot because
he
the starting lineup needs somebody.
He has good length and fluidity, and like I don't know. I look at the way he plays transition defense and the way he, you know, he's good with angles. He's good with making those reads and stuff. I could see it. I could see him being a good screen navigator and stuff like that. But the Raptors, I mean, they've kind of told us over the course of this year, the way they've deployed guys is, with the exception of Scotty, when they wanted Scotty guarding stars, mm-hmm. They have preferred point guard on point guard and to use that wing defender that they had, like any versatile piece on a wing.
But the thing is, I also feel like Darko, if you gave him true serum, does not trust Quickley's defense on ball.
No, I mean, and he probably shouldn't, given what we've seen in Toronto so far. Like, Quickley's been really good off the ball.
That's what we need, though, in the starting lineup. Yeah. Somebody who could actually step in. And so, I don't know if Ochai, I would love to see Ochai, like, even tried in different ways defensively just to see, like, maybe what matches
work. Like, let's see him on Shea tomorrow for a little bit.
I mean, look, I don't expect anyone to stop Shea, but if he forces Shea into four or five stops, then, you know, at least we'll have something to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, and when you're, you know, when you're up a position like that, and I know he's only 6'5", but he's long and strong. Like, he would be big against every point guard in the league, basically. You know, hey, can you get Shea even to get off the ball when he gets across half court?
Yeah.
Can you make him pick up his – can you make him turn his back just to kill a couple seconds so he has to turn and you know, they're dealing with 17 instead of 20 on the clock? Just little things like that.
I know you don't rate Avery Bradley's defense, but can you be a little Avery Bradley?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Avery Bradley was a good defender, but his reputation as like the best defender. And this is, I don't mean to say DeMar's wrong about something, but like you ask DeMar, this would have been like 2016-ish, maybe 2017, maybe 2015-ish, who the hardest defender was to score against. And at one point he said Avery Bradley, and then you pull up the numbers and like every time
he was always good against Boston.
Every time DeMar's played against Avery Bradley, he put huge points up. And it reminds me of the Pat Bev Russell Westbrook thing. It's like, you're just doing a lot without actually doing anything. And Bradley wasn't that. He was a little better than that. But there's a reason, like, he kind of fell off a cliff pretty quickly. And
but you get what I mean, though. Like, I want Ochai to at least emulate a little bit of that stuff.
Yeah, make it hard. So, make a guy, if a guy's going to drop 30 on you, make him walk away saying, like, damn, that was a tough 30 I dropped.
Yeah.
Speaking of point of attack defense, I want to kick this to you. So obviously we got to see a little bit of Jamias Ramsey and Javon Freeman Liberty yesterday.
Right,
they played 22 and 21 minutes respectively. Nothing there from either of them from the point guard perspective. They each had one assist. They didn't run much through them.
Yeah.
But defensively, both of those guys are guys who come to these small NBA opportunities with decent reputations defensively. Ramsey is kind of tough and physical. Javon more in the Gary Trent, like ball hawk. I'm going to poke a lot of balls loose and get a lot of steals mold. Have you seen anything from them, whether point of attack or just generally defensively?
Well, I think Darko has really emphasized that with Jamias. He's actually put him in some pretty difficult defensive matchups. So, for example, we were talking about the fact that Ochai spent a lot of time on Paolo. When it was not Ochai, it was Jamias, you know, and that's sort of been...
That's a big size mismatch. Jamias is thick, but he's 6'3". Right.
But he's strong, you know, he provides some kind of resistance. I think he's been really eager as well to play defense. Some of that over-aggression gets, like, countered by some teams. So there was a play yesterday where he got back cut, and not only did he get back cut, but in him flipping his body, trying to get back in position desperately, he literally tripped over himself and fell over. So, like, obviously that's not a great example of his defense. But I feel like he's probably has more of the size and the bulk to play defense. It seems like he's got really long arms. I think for me, it's just a question of, you know what, can you do enough offensively to not be in minus? I think the bar to be a guard offensively is so much higher than it is for a big, for example, right? But for him, at minimum, you're going to need to see him knock down threes at a somewhat decent rate. And you had brought up that he shot like 40% in the G League, and it was actually from above the break. So that's
good. He only took 12 corner three-point attempts during the regular season portion of the G League, and he shot 39.6% above the break.
But it's also, when you watch him now with the team, it's like the threes are very inconsistent. And even in warm-ups and things like this, and you got to be real sicko to come to see the Jamias Ramsey warm-up, but I am that person. And, like, yeah, I mean, I was telling you guys, like, I was watching him shoot some corner threes, and he hit some side of the backboard a couple of times. So, you know, regardless, that could all be a small sample thing. If he can hit the threes at a somewhat decent clip, because he actually can get to the basket a little bit, there's a bit of burst. Again, that athleticism,
and the strength,
long arms.
Right, again, with the being pretty solid.
Eat a little bit of contact on the way to the basket. So I actually think that part's okay. Javon, I know he's played really well for the 905, and he's definitely stepped up in the scoring department. But I think when he's come up to the Raptors, it's been really inconsistent. Like, I can't necessarily see him fitting into a role. I almost see more of a role, at least for me so far, in what Jamias is doing with the energy and the defense versus what Javon's doing, where it's just kind of like he's just trying to figure it out. Like, what are you about when you're with the Raptors?
Yeah, and, like, I think, you know, I think Javon's been okay. He's had a tremendous G League season, and I like him. Like, I think in a vacuum, Javon is better than Jamias Ramsey
for sure.
Right now.
Yeah.
But in terms of their fit right now and their utility, I agree with you. I do think Javon could probably stand to be a little more aggressive when he's in those lineups with the Raptors. And this is a huge challenge for any G League guy coming up, especially someone who has the ball in their hands a lot in the G League. If you remember when Lorenzo Brown was on a two-way, he had the highest usage rate in the G League and like a Pat McCaw level usage rate in the NBA. And that's because, like, some of that is randomness, but some of that is also you are making a conscious effort of, hey, I'm in the NBA now. I'm the last guy in the rotation. I'm not supposed to have the ball in my hand. I'm not supposed to shoot too much. I can't be a chucker, whatever. Right. Like, the team doesn't need me like that. I got to find my role. And that could be a tough adjustment. And I wonder if, you know, again, we're talking about tiny windows here, but Javon is
Javon is so aggressive
with the 905 as a cutter, as a slasher, quick decisions. You know, he'll shoot. I don't know if the Raptors want him shooting some of the threes he shoots with the 905 where he has a permanent green light.
Yeah.
But when the ball does find its way to him, I actually think he could stand to be a little bit more aggressive even. That could be a tough balance for a guy who probably doesn't want to come up and seem like he's just trying to get his in these opportunities. I think he's not being that level of aggressive for the right reasons. But those second units really need him to score. They need someone who's able to get 2 feet in the paint.
Right.
And if Javon could do anything, it's get 2 feet in the paint.
Okay. Well, like, there's going to be more opportunities for these guys because, you know, the roster is kind of what it is.
Everyone's out
right now.
Again tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
So no Quickly, no Barrett, obviously. Scotty, Jakob, Chris, DJ, all out again tomorrow. So these guys will have the same opportunities. That like Javon and Jamias played 43 minutes combined yesterday. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see how much they give to Jamias Ramsey the next two games because his 10-day expires after Saturday's game, and then they have to make a rest of season decision on him.
Right.
But yeah, there's going to be a lot of window for these guys, and if you know if Jonte's still down or anything like that, maybe some opportunity for Moji as well.
Yeah, they played the 5 J's lineup again.
Yeah,
Boston got 2 J's, but we got 5 J's.
Yeah.
Jalen McDaniels, Jordan Wara, Jonte Porter, Jamias Ramsey, Javon Freeman, Liberty.
Yes, they had more J's in the lineup than they hit J's in the game.
Oh, Blake, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's tough, man. I mean, look, there wasn't, this is a general question I have for you, but there wasn't very much like booing or anything like that in their crowd. And I saw a little bit of discussion of this online. Like, I don't, for me personally, like the performance is bad, but the performance is by players who are nominally wearing Raptors jerseys.
Yeah.
So it's like weird to come and boo. You're coming to boo the understudy.
If Scotty, RJ, Quickly,
and then Jakob, if those guys were all like, there were
a couple games post trades where I'm media, I'm not going to boo, but I came in here and talked about how disappointed I was in like, hey, they're getting beat. They're getting punked by 20 points a game. They're coming out and starting poorly.
Yeah.
And like those guys should have something to play for still as well. Mm-hmm. At least like, you know, developmentally, pride-wise, and next contract-wise, and stuff like that. That's a scenario where, I would understand you being a little frustrated with that. At this point in the year, the only emotion I really expect from fans is like, other than, you know, keeping an eye on the individual development, appreciating that you get to see, you know, Shea coming here in a potential MVP season on Friday and things like that. Probably apathy is going to be the biggest thing that the crowd and the fan base are feeling like. I feel like I got. So I went to a game as a fan this year, the Valentine's Day game against Pascal.
Oh, nice.
And that the crowd was tremendous for that game because Pascal's return, Scotty had a huge game. It came down to the last bucket. I'm in the crowd, which obviously I got on the Jumbotron. And
oh, you out of the Jumbotron?
Yeah, so obviously.
Oh,
so
how did I miss this?
Someone who is responsible for those things obviously realized I was like in a seat.
Oh.
And I got on the Jumbotron and I didn't notice.
Yeah.
And then someone mentioned to me after, and I was on my phone while I was on the Jumbotron complaining about Doug McDermott on Twitter.
Oh, my God. The worst reason.
Yeah, man. It was a break in play. But, like, Doug McDermott's going to do that to me specifically and to the Raptors. But, no, I feel like that's probably, maybe I'm missing one. But that was probably the last, like, great crowd game of the year that we'll get.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, look, once we had for us, the season finale was the trade deadline. Once that happened and we got sort of clarity on sort of what the roster is going to be, like, that's where the majority of, like, the interest in the team, especially this season, storyline-wise, was going to happen.
Yeah, and, we had some
epilogue, right, with, like, okay, there's some returning players. Also, how are the younger guys going to grow and develop? We were going to go pivot towards that direction. But then those guys got hurt, most notably Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like you pivot to the other guys to a lesser degree, and then they're also out now. So the situation you're left with is, like, yeah, it is what it is. It's tough, man. It really is tough. I did hear that they've raised ticket prices again.
So
for next year.
Yeah,
which is,
so
wow, I mean, that's tough.
I don't know about that. I haven't done the reporting on that. So no comment.
I might have just talked to one customer.
No comment for now. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is around the time that they're sending out season ticket renewals and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Do you get those emails from Raptors being like, hey, new tickets just dropped for tonight's game against the Kings? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, we
I bet they did.
You also get the like, hey, if you lock in your season tickets for next year, you know, you're guaranteed play-in tickets this year if they make it.
Ooh. Are we still in for the play-in?
They're not mathematically eliminated yet, but they are eliminated. Anyway, yeah, I feel like the season finale, like those two games against Indy where like Pascal win, you know, they lose to Pascal here and Scotty has the 29-point game is tremendous. Dude. And then in Indy, he has the triple-double and the Raptors win that game.
Yeah.
That'll go down as the Raptors' last good win, really. I think actually the only time
the pizza party was actually the finale. Oh, my God.
So they've only won one game since then. It was against Charlotte. So that's kind of, like, and once you lost Scotty, like even the individual development stuff, like with, you know, we've said this about IQ, like, like it's important that he shows developmental stuff and that's good. But like, really what you care about is within the context of a Scotty Barnes offense, how that all looks. So,
so what are we still doing on the Raptor show, man?
Well, we do go down to 1 hour middle of next week.
That is.
And then we're off one day next week for Jays Talk Plus.
Yes.
Cause the Jays open up the season.
Well, you know what? I think that's a sensible decision.
You want to talk about a $4.5 million betting scandal and pivot into baseball here?
That would have been a much better lead if we came in and be like, is Shohei Ohtani literally the Michael Jordan of baseball? Yeah. No, actually, the bigger thing is we get to pivot and talk about the rest of the league. So we're going to take a break and we're going to do that. But you've been listening to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, William Liu. Continue to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. So, Blake, yesterday we had the Kid Mero on the program.
Sure did.
And we talked some New York Knicks and other things, of course. Shouts to Mero again, once again. Can't say enough how much I was a fan and am a fan. But what got me thinking, too, was the Knicks take. And, you know, he's got the New York confidence. You know, he's talking about, you know, the Knicks are going to beat the Celtics and all that kind of stuff. I don't think they'll beat the Celtics in the playoffs. The Knicks will definitely make the playoffs, and I'm pretty certain that they're going to go quite far, actually, which is going to be my spicy take in a second. But at the same time, I don't know if they'll beat the Celtics. But anyway, time now for our spicy take, brought to you by New Chunky Spicy Soup. Are you ready to get fired up? This is my spicy take of the week. The Knicks are going to the conference finals.
Wow.
First time since 2000 that they'll be going that far in the playoffs. Believe, and I wasn't a Raptor fan at the time because I had just come to Canada 2 months before that, but I believe they beat the Raptors in the first round of that one. 2000.
They did. They swept the Raptors in three.
Yeah.
They beat the Heat in seven.
Swept them in three is so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a four. It was a best four swept out of seven. But it was so certain. You want to hear something very Knicks.
That's what the LeBronto years felt like. They swept us in three. Yeah.
This is very New York Knicks in the year 2000.
Okay.
The scores in that series.
Ooh, yeah, hit me.
92-88.
Uh-huh.
84-83. 87-80.
Yeah, now we talk.
So all close games, but only once in the entire series did a team break 90.
Well, you know, back then, like a 10-point lead, you basically empty your bench. Anyway, so.
Chris Childs on the other side in that one, by the way. This is pre-Chris Childs doing wild Chris Childs Raptors playoff stuff. But yeah.
There you go. Okay, so the Knicks, again, the prediction here. The Knicks will go to the conference finals for the first time since 2000. And this is how it's going to happen, okay? Right now, the Knicks are the four seed.
So they'd have to beat Boston for this projection to come through, but you're going to say...
But they're going to move up. Here's the thing. The teams above them, the Cavs, right above them, they're banged up right now.
Big
Mobley's
time.
Hurt again. Mitchell's hurt for a little bit. Dean Wade, your boy Dean Wade's out. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the Cavs coming down just a little bit, okay? The Bucks.
Max Strusso, too, by the way.
Yeah, right. The Bucks, right? Number two team in the... I might have misread the injury report. It might be Max Strusso.
No, they're both out.
Oh, they're both out. Okay, good. Yeah. The Bucks are still up and down, still quite inconsistent. Giannis missed a game here or there.
Giannis actually, so he's expected to miss tonight's game.
Mm.
Believe it's the first time he's missed three games in a row.
Uh-oh.
Like, ever.
Okay, there you go. I mean, they're still competitive. Dame is still giving them a lot, but ultimately, the Knicks are playing 48 minutes no matter what. And we've seen, the Knicks are injured too, but they're still getting results. Okay? So the Knicks are going to get up to that two seed. I think the bigger thing is Jalen Brunson is going for his first All-NBA selection, and I think he's absolutely going to deserve it. By year's end, there might even be a conversation of, well, maybe not first team, but second team is a real possibility for Jalen Brunson. That's how strong of a season he's having. So the two seed gets you obviously the winner of the first play-in. Right now, if I had to guess, it's probably going to be Pacers or Magic in that first round series. Both teams are fatally flawed on one end of the floor. Magic are going to go into the playoffs. They're going to struggle to score. The Pacers are not going to guard at all. And Haliburton probably will need some sort of procedure in the offseason. I think the Knicks should be heavily favored towards both those teams.
Yeah.
So they're through the first round. Second round, they probably got to beat either the Bucks or the Heat. The Heat obviously knocked out the Knicks last year. But guess what? At this point, the Knicks are going to have OG Anunoby to throw against the Jimmy Butler. So I don't think it'll be the same way. OG's guarded Jimmy really well over the years.
Yeah.
We've seen as a Raptor fan. If it's the Bucks, it'll be tough.
I mean, the Bucks got to get past the Heat first. By the way, that Giannis thing I said was wrong. He missed more than three games in a row last year. I saw a tweet about that. It must have just meant this year. This is the first time he said. Anyway,
whatever.
It's alarming that day-to-day has meant three games in a row.
Yes, it has been, actually. And I do hope that Giannis is all right.
Yes, absolutely.
But in any case, I think both series will go quite long. And, you know, if I'm envisioning this whole thing, I feel like OG hits a game winner at one point. I want to hear Mike Breen saying bang three times, the first triple bang from Mike Breen as OG hits the game winner. And then they get themselves to the conference finals again for the first time since 2000. Of course, they'll play the Celtics there, and I don't think they'll have a chance against the Celtics. They're 0-4 against the Celtics. I did check.
Yeah, they've also...
0-3 are in the season.
So some of these stats are a little tough to...
Yeah.
Like, you don't know who was in for what game unless you go through each box score and stuff like that. Yeah, the one red flags that the Knicks would have is that they are 7-14 against the top 10 teams in the league.
Okay. That's fair, but I mean, how many of those have they had their full roster?
This is what we don't know. And like, did the other teams have their full roster and stuff like this? This is where I need a better computer.
I guess my spicy take is I'm jumping on the Knicks bandwagon. I think you guys talked me into it yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, look, if Kyle had signed with them instead of Sixers, it was no questions asked who the bandwagon team in the Eastern Conference was. I think, look, I don't want to speak for all Raptor fans, but no one's getting on the Celtics train.
Hell no.
The Bucks, I mean, they're
cool. Like what?
Yeah, like I don't know what the hook would be.
Yeah, it's like being like, hey, I'm a Coldplay fan in 2024. Yeah. Like, cool, great. You're one of the fans of the most popular bands ever. Like,
and then the 76ers. I mean, I still have a lot of time for Kyle and B-Ball Paul, but the rest of that, I don't think Raptor fans are going to be getting behind Joel Embiid, right? So, and it's certainly not the Cavs. I think there's enough residual Cavs stuff and the Mobley Barnes stuff that even if you like, that's one of the coolest backcourts in the league, Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland.
Yeah.
But I don't know if any Raptors fans are getting there.
Yeah.
And then it's just a year too early for my Magic.
It is a little early for your Magic. By the way, I just looked at the standings now. The Sixers are in the eighth slot right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're technically tied with Miami at the same record, 38-31,
and half a game back of the Pacers.
Right. So this could move a lot, but I mean, damn.
But the 76ers are obviously, they've been without Joel Embiid for a lot. They missed Maxey for a chunk of that, where like every day you looked at the box score and it was Tobias Harris and Kelly Oubre leading them in scoring every game.
That's what Nick Nurse deserves.
Yeah, it was Nick Nurse, by the way, who is playing Jeff Doughton regularly now and just signed DJ Wilson to a 10-day the other day.
All right.
Nick Nurse stays Nick Nurse. It's great.
Everyone has favorites. At least he's playing Jeff Doughton this time around.
Yeah. With the 76ers, a fascinating thing I came across, we didn't get to talk to Mark Stein as much about this yesterday, about the league scoring drop-off, right, and how that is. So for anyone who doesn't know, the league offensive rating has trended down as the season's gone on. Foul rate has really trended down. And then if you dig into the foul rate deeper, as Sravan NBA on Twitter has, you see that is heavily on charges and defensive three-second calls are down. So it seems like refs are letting people defend in the paint a little bit more. Now, whether you like that or not, whether you like changing the points of emphasis or emphasizing them more heavily in the regular season or not, it's pretty clear from the data that refs have given a little bit back to defenses as the year has gone on. That is in contrast to what's happened the last couple years in the NBA. Maybe they're just getting a head start on playoff whistle or whatever. Anyway, a funny thing in that data as you go through it and sort through, and again, this is someone else's work, but you look at the before and after free throw attempt stuff, and like a good chunk of the impact comes down to like Joel Embiid hasn't been playing. Like the Sixers are getting more, the Sixers during this sample, like pre and post NBA adjustment, which is, people seem to think happened around Christmas time or whatever.
Sure.
It also coincides with Joel Embiid playing less. The Sixers are getting more than 9 fewer free throw attempts per game since before then, and that's because Embiid was averaging like 12 a game.
Right.
So like, there is this league-wide downward trend in offense that is not unique to the 76ers, and this league-wide downward trend in free throw attempts, but like a good portion of that is just Joel Embiid's not playing.
Damn. Honestly, if he were healthy for this season, I think he had a really good chance to repeat as MVP.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he is, he's obviously not. So now it's just like a race to, is he going to be better in time for the playoffs? And like, it's one thing, like, you know, if they could get the sixth seed, then he has a whole playoff series to shake off the rust and get back to form. But if he has to get dropped back in a like one and done play-in situation, and they'll have two chances no matter what. I don't think the Bulls are going to catch 4 more games on them with only 13 to go. Like the sixth.
Hey, man, the Bulls are they're starting to ascend. It's actually kind of incredible.
Yeah, they've been good. Like certainly the gap between them and like the Hawks is pretty significant. Yeah.
That's the funny thing with the play-in race is the Hawks. Even no matter how badly they do, they just have to be in the play-in.
They can't. They're 4.5 games up on Brooklyn with 14 to go.
Brooklyn and Toronto just keep losing. There's no, even if Atlanta doesn't want to play the play-in or they want to like tank or whatever, obviously Trae Young's been injured, so that's going to impact them. But like, they have no choice. They're in the play-in no matter what.
By the way,
they're the least deserving play-in team ever, I feel like.
By tomorrow,
The
Raptors could at least be mathematically eliminated from hosting a play-in game.
Oh,
so they could if the Bulls win tonight and the Raptors lose tomorrow, the Raptors could no longer catch the Bulls for ninth. So the chance of hosting a play-in game is out the window. We can't run that back.
Yeah, how much
from last year?
I was gonna say how much difference a year makes. Where We're now so far behind Chicago. But it's obviously Toronto is launching their rebuild. So, this is all facetious comments.
I do like that spicy take that the Knicks could make a run to the conference finals.
It's just uninspiring, man. Like, I honestly think, like, which other team do you really want to root for? Like, another Miami Heat, like, Heat culture kind of run? Like,
if they had kept Kyle, yeah. But I'm not.
Yeah, right. But they just kicked Kyle to the curb.
Yeah, I'm not putting that energy behind Terry Rozier. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Scarence Terrence.
Yeah, the Sixers, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, they would be a nice little spoiler, I guess. This would be the one year where the Sixers don't actually have that many expectations. And yet, I don't know. They might just not even make out the play-in if they, like right now, the play-in is 7-8 between them and Miami. Like, even with Embiid, I could totally see them losing a game like that.
And then they'd have to fend off Chicago in the winner gets the 8 seed. Now, if we really want to,
they could definitely be Chicago.
If we really want to put our hater hats on or our slander pot hats on, Embiid getting back in time, but the Sixers still landing in the 8 seed, and the Celtics get Joel Embiid and the Sixers in the first round. Can you imagine this Celtics team were to get bounced in the first round? Like, they're going to be the only team in the league to win 60 games this year. They're lapping everyone in net rating. Yeah. What are they? I think they've gone. Yeah, they're 13-7 against the top 10 teams in the league. So they've taken care of good competition. If they were to just like get that bad bounce of like, hey, Joel Embiid's back in time and they're the 8th seed. Here you go. That'd be entertaining.
Hey, listen, Embiid's he's a first round specialist, as you know. The man is not losing the first round most times.
Yeah.
He's quite good in that first round. Yeah, I don't know, man. The East, I think it's just like the West is like such a more compelling kind of.
Well, okay, so here's a question for you then. So you think you're not saying the Knicks are the second best team in the East, but you think they're going to go to the conference finals. That's your spicy take. You have them at least in the mix as the second best team in the East.
I think they're going to end up as a 2-seed at the end of the season. I really do. Again, they're playing Josh Hart 49 minutes a game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you? Okay, so this applies to any of the non-Boston teams in the East. Would Milwaukee or Cleveland or New York or Philly, like which West playoff teams do you think they could beat?
That's a great question. That's a really good question.
Because like Sacramento as a 6 seed, we just saw them last night and they pasted the Raptors, but like they are under the hood. They're a little weak. Like they're 12 games over 500 and they're 18th in the league in net rating. Like they've done some clutch merchant stuff. They've gotten a little bit of good fortune. You know, the defense ranks in the 20s, which we know doesn't carry into the playoffs and stuff like that. So they're probably the weakest of the West playoff teams, especially if you believe what the Pelicans have done lately. Like, do you think the Knicks would beat the Kings in a playoff series? Do you think the Cavs would beat the Kings in a playoff series?
The Cavs would also beat the Kings. They match up well. I think, you know, what's an interesting thing is, so 10th right now in the West is still the Golden State Warriors. So I feel like they've just been there all season.
Yeah.
In a playoff setting, how many of the top 6 in the East right now? Let's take Boston out of the equation. Although, by the way, last time Boston played, they lost in the finals. You take Milwaukee over Golden State in a 7-game playoff series? Everybody healthy?
Everybody healthy, yes.
Okay. You take Cleveland over them?
No.
New York?
No. It's so hard to bet against Steph in a playoff setting.
The other two teams options are Orlando or Indiana. Like,
yeah.
And that's the 10th seed in the West, man.
Yeah, but it's also like it's
there's a really good chance they don't even just make
the playoffs. Yeah, like it's the 10th seed in the West with the asterisk of come playoff time when that very old team doesn't have to manage minutes and stuff like that. Like, it's just very hard to bet against Steph Curry in the playoffs. But yeah, like it's possible they don't make the playoffs at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm very down to just fast forward. You know what I mean? Like, if this were the Raptors season were like in a 2K kind of thing, I'd simulate, you know, the rest of the season type of thing. Sim to end right now.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning too, like because the West is so good, like the Warriors are in 10th, but they're also 4 games over 500 and their net rating would rank 7th in the East. Like
that's why I also looked at it.
They're not that bad.
And they're having a bad year for what they actually expect. And honestly, not even just bad year, quote unquote, like they are having a bad year based on the talent that they have.
Like they're 6 games ahead of the Hawks who are 10th in the East.
Yeah, again, the Hawks, give up that play-in game, all right? Give it up, just surrender it, please. Nobody wants to see the 30-38 Hawks playing a play-in. But yeah, okay. Well, Blake, I'm going to see you down in the arena.
Yeah, man.
Real soon.
Go get warmed up.
I'm going to go get some shots up, but we're going to take this break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show. I'm Blake Murphy. Will Liu is out of here for the last hour. He is headed down to the media game, which I will be heading to in a little bit to coach in as well, alongside Raptors assistant Jama Malalela. So Amit Mann joins me now for this segment. Before we get into that, two small updates. We were supposed to have Mohamedou Gay on the show today. We're rescheduling that one like we are for Garrett Temple. I believe we'll have Garrett tomorrow, Amit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So fun show tomorrow, already stacking up. Jamal McGlure will be on the show. We'll do some Thunder stuff, talking about Shea and his MVP candidacy. The other update, if you are a March Madness person, I hope you picked the slight underseeds. We have an 11-6 victory and a 9-8 victory so far. So only underseeded teams have won so far in March Madness here. Duquesne beating BYU and Michigan State beating Mississippi State. None of the big prospects in action yet. Certainly none of the highest name Canadian prospects either. Amit, did you get in Daniele's pool that he
not
sent
yet,
the email
but
about?
I will. Actually, it's already
started. It's too late, man.
Never mind. No, I
did
not.
It's too late. Unless
no,
you just, not. I guess, punt on the games that have already got going. You're out of here. Amit, so you and I are going to do, obviously, we were expecting Mo Gay here, so we're going to pivot a little bit. Will was just laying out for us his spicy take that he thinks the Knicks could end up not only as the two seed in Eastern Conference standings that's very, very tight right now, 2 through 5, but also 2 through 8, really.
Sure.
Only 6 games separating those 7 teams. So he thinks they could end up in the 2 seed. He also thinks they could end up going on a run to the conference finals. Building off of that, what you and I are going to do, we're going to look around the playoff picture in both conferences. You go contender or pretender. So I guess I'll start by kicking it to you for who is the team right now, if we're going contender to pretender, and we'll include, I don't know, we'll say 18 teams. So the 10 teams that are in the play-in and higher in the West. Gotcha. And then in the East, we'll go as low as 8, no disrespect to the Bulls or the Hawks. But I think we can safely say the Hawks are pretenders. And as much as I like DeMar's clutch play this year, I think they're probably pretending.
Hey, wherever there's a play-in, you will find the Hawks and Bulls.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So of the teams that are relevant here to the playoff picture, who is at the top of your contender? Who are you most confident at this stage?
I mean, it's going to be the Boston Celtics.
Okay.
And I mean, I was looking back at the Jrue Holiday trade, and I can't believe how much they got in terms of what he brings compared to what went out. And, like, once that trade happened, you take out Marcus Smart, and here is Jrue Holiday coming in. And it's, like, a pretty seamless addition with him. But also, there's a bit more offensive pop there. And just their top 8 or so. Like, you have Derek White, who's an X-factor, like, personified as an X-factor. That is your guy. Jaylen Brown is taking a step forward. Porzingis, Al Horford is, like, dusting off that knee. He's starting to really ramp it up here. So it's for sure them. I actually want to hear your thoughts on the Boston Celtics, because we get into this cycle each and every year, right? Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, those are their 2 stars. But after that, you're like, are they going to be ready to take that next step? We saw them in the finals a few years ago against the Golden State Warriors. And do you think they have it? Do they have the team finally that could actually get them over the hump and beat whoever's going to be coming out of the West?
To beat whoever's coming out of the West, no. I would pick the field over the Celtics. I'm confident that the Celtics are a very good regular season team. They're going to be very good in any playoff series that they're in. You know, obviously they have by far the best record in the league. They're the only team that's going to win 60 games this year. They're lapping everyone in net rating. Even if we focus in against only good teams, they're 13-7 against the top 10 teams in the league. They've checked every box that you can in the regular season. However, when it comes to what would be different this time, and I know that the Celtics are not, like, they're not getting bounced in the first round. Like, they've been to the finals. They have done a lot of stuff in the playoffs over the years. But to me, Jason Tatum is a very, very good player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably, this is framing something for the sake of framing it away, but probably the best player in the league who an opposing team is not, like, restructuring their defense to stop.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. He's kind of right on the fringe. If he was a little bit he's not plateaued, but he hasn't grown quite enough as a playmaker, taking advantage for others of what those defenses give to him, how they're going to react to him and things like that, to be quite that level of number one scorer. Now, that's fine when you're on a depth team where Kristaps Porzingis also averages 20. Jaylen Brown is a really good number two scorer. You do have, like you mentioned, Derek White, who arguably should have more of the crunch time offense in his hands, given how Tatum has struggled there a little bit. So I'm confident that they're good. I'm not confident that enough has changed in terms of what their late game playoff execution looks like to get all the way there. I think there's a small risk that obviously the numbers back up their offense. Like, they're the number one offense in the league this year. They're the number one three-point shooting team in the league this year. Those things are very related. A small part of me worries a little bit when a team generates 47% of their offense via the three ball. That, you know, what if they're, you know, how do you handle the variant swings over seven games? Mm-hmm. You know, the Celtics would tell you, hey, we're going to win four times in seven games because we can do more than just the three, and we're such a good three-point shooting team. But it is at least a little bit of a concern given the volume there. And then honestly, my biggest question with the Celtics is their overall depth. And I know they did some smaller moves to address this. They brought in an Xavier Tillman. For example, Sam Hauser has really emerged as, hey, what looked like a seven-man team on paper has really turned into an eight and a half if you rate Luke Kornet, who, you know, certainly has a role in the rotation but probably falls to the fringes in a playoff series. Sam Hauser being as legitimate as he had 10 threes the other night before leaving the game with an ankle sprain. Like, he was on the way to break Clay's record, and he's at 43% on the year. So I do think they've done some things to address the depth there. I worry a little bit still, though, with Al Horford at age 37, with Kristaps Porzingis' injury history, you know, what happens if? And every team is going to have some of those what happens if, but that front court in particular, that's I'm just a little shy of putting them as at the top of the championship list for me. Certainly the best team in the Eastern Conference.
I mean, for me, it comes down to paint pressure and how much are you creating through your star players, right? And Jason Tatum, I think he's made some strides here. He's doing a little bit more of that. And I think Joe Mazzulla has encouraged him to get in the paint more because this is like they've been preparing all season for these moments right here. Are we going to be ready to go when the lights are the brightest? And I think Jason Tatum is still a little bit too mid-range heavy, and you can look at the reads, you can look at the pop as a pull-up shooter. It's a bit up and down, and sometimes you might go out for 50 in a playoff game, and that's awesome. But then what about game 6 and 7? And it's about that consistency, and that's why driving the paint is so important because that is a reliable source of offense. And then it comes down to Jaylen Brown, and I think he's probably their best paint presence when it comes down to all the players that they have as at their disposal. But is he ready for the next step? And I think that's actually kind of where my question is. Is he ready to be that person that's going to be driving the paint and also making those kickouts and skip passes are going to be so important for them? And how Jrue Holiday fits in, like, remember, like, the famous quote is, there's only one ball, right? So how can everyone kind of eat at the same time and also, you know, flow off of each other? And I'm curious how they look in a playoff context for sure against some of these teams, like a Miami Heat. You guys were just talking about it, like, they're always going to be in it just because they got arguably the best coach in the league right there. Anyways, that's a Celtics rant right there. I was curious where you were kind of standing on that.
Yeah, and to your point about being able to get into the paint and pressure the rim and things like that, obviously, you know, some teams are doing that to shoot there. Some teams are doing that to spray out and generate their threes that way. And Boston does a good job of generating their threes that way. But they are second to last in the NBA in terms of what portion of their shots come within 14 feet of the rim. So that's what we're talking about. At the rim, and then that floater range as well. They are fourth to last at the rim specifically, and they are second to last in that 14-foot area. Only Dallas, the Luka Doncic-centric offense, where you can understand it even a little bit more there because you have Kyrie, who's such a perimeter-oriented player, and the heliocentricity of Luka Doncic. With Boston, it's a little more, you know, five out rather than one guy driving kick, one guy driving kick.
Who is top five?
Who is top five? So the Lakers are the Lakers. Weirdly, this is just in volume.
Not
in connecting on those. The Lakers are up there. Orlando ranks really well. The Raptors.
I believe that.
Yeah, they have ditched the
finishing
three ball.
Is a separate matter, but getting there. Yes.
And then Cleveland's a weird one where they get to the rim at a top three rate, but they don't use that floater range at all. It's basically like Cleveland is probably the most extreme analytics shot spectrum team where it's like it's rim and threes and even that floater range that's somewhere in between analytically, like we know guys can get in their floater package, hook shots, things like that. Cleveland doesn't touch that. So they're decent. They're really solid at getting to the rim, but they won't, even with Mitchell and Garland, this is a little bit surprising to me. Those guys don't use the floater package all that much. It's, hey, if we can't get to the rim, we're kicking that out for the next thing.
Or it's Jared Allen.
Yeah. Or it's Jared Allen dunking. Yeah.
Jared Allen lobs.
Okay, so that is who you're most confident in. It's the Boston Celtics.
Yep.
For me, that team is the Denver Nuggets. They're the defending champions. Yeah. Obviously, you know, that stands out a lot. The underlying metrics are very, very strong for them. You could make the argument that, hey, they haven't even had their foot all the way on the gas yet. They're the number one clutch offense in the league. They've been a little mediocre against the league's best team. They're 10-10 against teams in the top 10.
Yeah.
But I'd have to imagine some of that is other teams are getting more up for Denver than Denver is getting up for.
And
you know, Denver's
just keep on seeing them. In these moments, like they're like, all right, fourth quarter. It's like they know the minute mark of when they have to turn up, and they do it collectively. It's so special watching this team. They're so much fun.
Yeah, it was, and the Dallas game was a great example of it. Now, I know, obviously, Kyrie hit the game winner in that, and Dallas is hungrier in that game that maybe than Denver is. But Jokic and Murray were, by their standards, not very good in that game. And then in the fourth quarter, it's like, okay, it's time now. We're going to put it together. That one didn't work out. Yeah. You can get bit in the playoffs, but four times over seven games, I feel pretty good about the Nuggets. The knock on the Nuggets relative to a team like the Celtics would be, well, the path in the West is just so much more difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the contender side.
Actually, on the Nuggets, one more question. If they don't win the championship, what do you think will be their downfall?
I mean, I think it's probably just going to be that the West is really, really difficult. Yeah. Like, I don't think there is a team that's going to be like, oh, we have an answer for Jokic. Mm-hmm. Jamal Murray took his playmaking play to another level last year in the postseason when teams tried to take away Jokic as a passer a little bit more. Jamal ran a little bit more point guard and kind of it flowed that way. I think they've shown they have those counters. They have the ability to adjust. It's just going to be a matter of like I don't think they have one big weak spot where I'm like, that is going to be what cost them. Maybe their defense is like a little on the conservative side.
Sure.
You know, maybe because they don't shoot the three a ton. Like if they got in a series with Boston and Boston beat them, I would guess that the 3-point differential is a big factor in that because that's the number one team in 3-point volume and the number 30 team in 3-point volume. So it would be something like that, but mostly it's just the West is very difficult.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the pretender side, which of the teams that is like discussed as in the mix or in a playoff series or playoff spot right now that you're like, I think they're overrated. I don't rate them. I don't think they're as good as maybe their surface level stuff says.
Yeah. Aside from the Timberwolves, just because of the cat factor, you got to factor that in and he might be back. Who knows? The LA Clippers. I have a lot of questions about the LA Clippers. And it's, I talked about this with Steve Jones Jr. a few weeks ago. It's that they have a style of offense that is great for the regular season. They have a lot of stars. A lot of guys can get their shot off in a variety of ways. Like Ty Lue is one of the best at getting his players a shot in the spots that they like. And that's awesome, right? But it's a very difficult way to win a championship. One round, two rounds, sure. I can see, definitely see that. But getting Kawhi, Paul George, James Harden in their spots constantly while teams are making adjustments on the fly in a seven-game series against the Denver Nuggets, against the Timberwolves, against the Pelicans, who knows? I have questions about how they're able to do that. I don't like the big kind of the rotating guys that they have. Like Zubac is great. Plumlee, Tice, can you really trust them? I'm not really sure. And also, I think we're not really valuing as much Russell Westbrook and what he brings as an intangibles player. Like that is kind of his MO.
If he's even back in time for the playoffs,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And that's my worry is that they kind of need that toughness, that ruggedness, that feistiness that he brings. And a lot of these guys, like with Paul, with Kawhi and James, they kind of do it. They get themselves ready on their own. So when they're ready, it's like, hey, I'm here. But who's getting the team ready? And that could be the coach's job, but sometimes you do need that on-the-floor leader. And Russell Westbrook, I think he represents the pulse of this team. And if he's there...
Certainly the second unit.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And like some of the lineups that they've had with him along with some of the other starters, it's been a bit up and down. They had a few lineups that are pretty good before James Harden arrived. But since then, yeah, it's a bit different. And it's getting down to the intangibles.
One thing I can say safely, the Clippers will need to do a better job of in the postseason. Last night, James Harden got a foot in the paint, kicked the ball out to Kawhi Leonard in the corner, and then James Harden closed out on Kawhi's shot. I don't know what happened, if it was a joke, if I missed something, missed something.
He explained.
He did?
He did.
Okay, what was his explanation?
He said that, you know, I'm just trying to have some fun. So they were up by a lot in that game, right? They were up by, I think, 20 or 21
Yeah, they won
points.
By 13, and a lot of that was like garbage time comeback.
Exactly. So he's like, I'm just trying to lighten the mood. We've had a lot of losses lately, and I'm just trying to get guys smiling because I think that's important for us going down the stretch here.
It's a good point.
Interesting strategy.
Yeah, it's a bit of a funny one. I saw the clip. Yeah. I did not see the explanation, so thank you for that. Yeah. Don't close out on your own guys come playoff time, even in a blowout is
Kawhi
what I would.
A shot too. I mean, they did later on in the possession, they did make a three, which was assisted by James Harden. But yeah, that was a funny one. What are your thoughts on the Clippers?
Yeah, I like them. Obviously the Russell Westbrook health factor is something, and like anytime you have a team that has Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, you're going to be a little bit worried about the health factor. One thing I really like about this team, and assuming health, one thing that gives me a ton of confidence is they have five players who play regular minutes for them and get a lot of threes up, who are all shooting 40% or better on three. Yeah. Paul George, James Harden, Norman Powell, and Amir Coffey are all shooting 40% or better.
Sounds like the Celtics.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that now, look, having said that, they are not quite as reliant on the three to create their offense. Yeah. And Kawhi and James Harden's ability to, you know, Kawhi's ability to get to the rim himself,
yeah,
Paul George's ability to attack as a second side guy, be a secondary scorer, and then James Harden's ability to create those good looks for, yeah, others on three.
His playmaking is ridiculous.
Yeah, so good. I have some good confidence there. I can't go pretender with them. One, because I've kind of, you know, Alex Wong early in the season made a great case for them. Kind of have stuck with that through as a show pick throughout, yeah, the season. But it's just, it's also like, if Kawhi Leonard gets to the playoffs healthy, I know what that looks like,
yeah,
too much. I'm not going to pick against it. Again, though, this is a case where, like, look at the matchups in the Western Conference. Yeah. To your point about their center rotation, what if they match up with Jokic? Like, now, the interesting thing here is, like, Zubats, yeah, is good, but in the backup role, do they use their backup centers, or do they do kind of the Raptors Jokic strategy? Is Kawhi guarding Jokic?
Yeah.
We've seen that OG had been one of the best in the past at not limiting Jokic, because you're not going to do that, but slowing that down and making sure the offense operates in a way your defense can handle. Maybe you look at that. So I think there's a level of defensive versatility there as well with that team. I just really, really hope that they get to the playoffs healthy.
Yeah.
And Westbrook's one thing.
Yeah.
Like, if he misses a couple games where he's not 1,000% with the hand thing, by the time the playoffs roll around, you can get there with that. But, like, let's see a proper Clippers playoff run fully healthy. I would really like to see that. I would love to see it for Norm, too, because Norm's been so, so good for them. I know, yeah, he's banged up a little bit right now, too. But, yeah, so he'd be right.
He had that big scar.
He had that. He's dealing with something. He's got a leg thing right now that I think he sat out last night.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a major thing, but another thing worth keeping an eye on there. Although the Clippers might also be, you know, to what we're talking about, playing it extra cautious right now because they're pretty safe from the play-in,
sure,
situation. So maybe just making sure they get to the playoffs.
Something I just stumbled upon. Yeah. Interesting. So how Nikola Jokic has fared against the LA Clippers. He is shooting this. We got to look at the film and everything, but yeah, he's shooting 31%, 27% from three. And then his numbers are still very good. It's 27, yes, 15, and 9.5.
So is that just this year, or is that?
That's this season.
Okay.
In two games.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I'd have to go back and dig into, yeah, you know, who was guarding him and how the Clippers approached it. But yeah, I wonder if a guy like Kawhi sees time, yeah, on him in a series like that.
This is where you think about a Ty Lue, like how he's able to, yeah, manage games, especially late as the series goes on. He's kind of like LeBron James. He gets stronger as well.
Yeah, he's a very, very good coach. And obviously Mike Malone is as well on the Nuggets side. You know, this West is good enough that if you don't have a good coach, you're, yeah, in trouble in that playoff bracket. But yeah, Ty Lue is a very, very good tactician.
Interesting team, the Pelicans.
Yeah, I actually wanted to talk to Garrett Temple about this if he was on today. So we'll talk to him about it tomorrow, yeah, because the Pelicans are a team that he was on that team the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that certainly lately looks a lot more comfortable in their skin. Zion has been better over the last maybe 3 weeks than we've seen him. I don't know, maybe not ever, because like he still looks like he's short, like a little bit of the burst from when he first came in.
It's been a while. Yeah.
As a scorer,
yeah,
he hasn't been on this level in quite some time. I love Brandon Ingram's offensive game. I think it's one of the prettiest offensive games in the league.
Yeah.
You know, having the ability to make that mid-range game a part of your team's offense and have that operate efficiently, because that's Ingram's space, right? Like, they have good guys, mm-hmm, to space the floor. Trey Murphy's going to bang a bunch of threes. They've got, you know, their supporting cast to bang threes as well. And then, hey, Zion takes care of the paint. And then Brandon Ingram, you can have that mid-range that is open because of our three-point shooting and, yeah, because of our rim pressure. Now, this is also a team, though, that is a little inexperienced come playoff time. They've only had one playoff run with this core. It was 2 years ago. It was a quick one series thing. So that's where my question would be with them. This is a Western Conference playoff field that's very, very difficult. There are teams that are very experienced there. But I will say, as far as the Pelicans are concerned, I am buying what I've been seeing over this last little bit. You know, I really, really like Trey Murphy. I've been high on him on this show before. I like Herb Jones. The three-point shooting has been like best in the league since the calendar, yeah, flipped over. He's up to 43% on the year now. I haven't even mentioned CJ McCollum, who's like a third option here.
Yeah.
JV, very, very steady in the middle. Now they're going to mix and match that with Larry Nance against certain matchups.
Which is a nice thing to have, right?
Yeah, very nice thing to have. And Larry Nance is a guy I really like as a person and as a bench piece, yeah, as well. And then, you know, I don't know how much Jose Alvarado plays in a playoff series when things tighten up and everyone has to be able to be an offensive threat as well. But he's even improved his three-point shooting to 37% in a smallish sample this year. So I'm excited to see that team. That's probably the team that I am most curious about how they look in a playoff series. I'd probably pick them at this moment to lose in the first round, just given the strength of the top of the Western Conference.
Who would they face right now?
They would face the Clippers right now if the season ended today. Yeah. So I'd probably lean toward them being on the first round, but they're the team that I am most curious about.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do one more.
Just one more for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So Herb Jones, right? Just looking at his 3-point development, right? Because it's been so impressive. Like last season, he shot 34%. This season, he is 43%.
Yep.
That is like a Scotty Barnes-like jump. I mean, for the first portion of the season, at least.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, man. That's really cool. And just look with that team. I mean, like they finished very well at all levels of the basket. And of the court, like, and you have C.J. McCollum, he's got the pull-up three. He can finish in the paint, especially with his short floater range. Zion, he's finding himself. And I think they've found something with point Zion as well when you have other guys flying off screens. Then you have JV, he can come off some pick and rolls. He can finish in the paint. He does have that three-point shot just to keep teams honest, just a little bit. What their challenge is probably, I would say the experience. But at the same time, probably just a little bit of size, especially around the wing area. Mm-hmm. It's good, right? And but I think, you know, when you get into a playoff context with some of these teams like the Clippers, where they have so many bruising players that can do so much, and you can't really put Zion on them.
Yeah.
Physically, yes, but...
And defensively,
yeah.
You know, one of their kind of nuclear options on paper is supposed to be, well, Zion at center lineups, how could you possibly defend against that? But if those lineups can't stay on the floor defensively, that kind of neutralizes that. It would be interesting to see what teams, you know, obviously JV and Larry Nance is a good center rotation, but what teams would you be tempted to go Zion at center against just to see? Herb Jones, by the way, since December 31st, so since New Year's Eve, 52.8%. On almost 4 3-point attempts per game.
And the Raptors found out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Raptors really did find out. We're going to wrap this segment out. I have one last note. This is not, I don't think they're good enough to count as a contender or pretender anyway. So I don't want to, it's not a bold take to say that I don't think they'll be that great. But because they are 7 games over .500 and because the Miami Heat always do have that playoff magic, they have the Jimmy Butler, they have the Heat culture, they have probably the best coach in the NBA in Eric Spoelstra. There are a lot of red flags beyond just the fact that they're in seventh in the East. They barely have a positive net rating. And the biggest one for me, and look, some of this is going to be Jimmy misses a game here. Terry Rozier is out. He hasn't been integrated, et cetera. They are 4-18 against the top 10 teams in the league.
Mm.
They have, and look, I know that they save it for the playoffs. It's just, it is a little, and maybe some of this is I'm sour with them trading Kyle Lowry and stuff. There are fewer indicators than in prior years that the Heat will have that ability to flip the switch come playoff time. 4-18 against the best teams in the league is a little worrisome.
Yeah, so they beat the Cavaliers last night, 107-104.
Shorthanded Cavaliers team, though.
Yeah, definitely. And Bam was not playing in that matchup, I believe. Yeah, he was not playing. But you're right. And like, how often do you want to play this game where we just all of a sudden we find playoff Jimmy, we find our mojo going into the playoffs? Like, you can't keep on doing this.
I mean, you can. They have been doing
it. It's true, but at some point, like, it's going to be like, look, the hole is too big.
Yeah.
And you can't keep on relying on beating the Bucks and Celtics in a surprising fashion.
Yeah, and like the ability to respawn Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and stuff like that, they're good at it, but it's very difficult to maintain that over a long haul. We're going to take a break. I'm going to go coach the media game. You've got the fourth segment handled here. Amit, thanks for doing this with me. We'll take a break. When we come back, Amit Mann handling the final segment of the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your fill-in host, Amit Mann, bringing you home on this episode. Will and Blake are down at Scotiabank Arena for the media game. We will find out tomorrow if Will Liu has more fouls than shots made. That will break it all down for sure. Thank you to Derek for playing that song right there. For those on the podcast feed, maybe don't hear it, but it's Onyx Slam. Love that track. But getting back to good basketball players, all right? So the Suns face the Hawks at home tonight. Catch it on Sportsnet 1 at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Joining me now, Gerald Bourguet covering the Suns for PHNX Sports. My guy, been doing a lot of stuff with you over the years. Happy to talk to you once again. How are things going, my man? You hear me?
Hey. Yeah, how you doing, Amit?
Doing well, man. How are things on your end? How's the season going for you? Because, I mean, on the court, the Suns have been a little bit up and down, but how are you?
I'm doing great. I actually just got married last Friday, so it's been I just got back to work a couple days ago. Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah. You got me at a good time. Yeah.
There you go. All smiles. That's a good thing. I'm going to leave that right there. That's it. So, tell me something. Has Nazir Little found out why fans are asking him to do a jersey swap with Grady Dick?
I'm assuming that he's known all along, but that was fantastic. I love that he leaned into that. That was so great. I got to ask him about that, though. We didn't see him in the locker room last night, but I gotta talk to him about that.
The content for the people, right? That's what that question right there, it's going to offer a lot. The other day, Will Lou asked Grady Dick about the jersey swap with Anthony Black, and so you're doing the people's work. Everyone was curious, and Grady gave a great answer. But on to Kevin Durant. So he passed Shaquille O'Neal for eighth all-time on the scoring list. He is now almost 3,000 points behind Will Chamberlain for seventh. Dirk is like 150 points away from that. And then afterwards, you're at Kobe, 800. Or sorry, you're at MJ for 800. That's for passing MJ at the fifth spot. So I wanted to hear what your thoughts are here. Is like how high can Kevin Durant soar here? Like it feels like if he keeps on this trajectory, he keeps on kind of flowing the way he is, he could end up like third all time when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think it was kind of cool last night. They played a video from Shaq himself on the Jumbotron when KD passed
Durantula.
He was challenging him to climb all the way to the top. I don't think he'll quite get there, but I do think with the rate that he's playing at, like he's still averaging damn near 30 points a game this season at age 35. As long as he stays healthy, I think third is not out of the question. It'll take a couple seasons, obviously, for him to get, you know, even to the next spot. But the trajectory he's on, it's hard to doubt him. And especially because, like, you look at the buckets he's getting this season, and so much of the Suns' offense is not easy. Like a lot of the shots that he's taking are tough, contested, unbelievable shots. So if they are able to figure that out and keep the big three healthy, maybe they'll actually get some easier shots and continue to climb that list.
I was watching the game last night and they won that one, but it was Yusuf Nurkic. He's up at the top of the key and he gives Kevin Durant this like pass along on his 45 cut, and he hit this like baseline 2-point mid-range shot. I'm just like, this is ridiculous. And like, this is what we expect from him. We should be amazed. Yeah. We're like, yeah, that's Kevin Durant. That's what he does. As he said, I'm Kevin Durant, damn it. You got to remember. Don't forget, I'm Kevin Durant, damn it. Oh, man, what have you learned about him actually this season that you didn't know? Like on court, off court, just his personality, because he's a bit of a polarizing character in the NBA, right? Some people feel like, you know, he took the easy road out with joining the Warriors, and others feel, you know, quite different, that you got to respect someone that is going to be, you know, maybe top five scoring all time. So your thoughts.
I think it's not so much something that I've learned, but something that I have a deeper appreciation for is just his basketball mind. Because when he's in the right mood to like talk to us and share his knowledge of the game, he'll just give us answers that have so much more insight than you're used to getting when you talk to most players. And he does keep it real. Like that's the one thing that people always hammer him for, is being sensitive or all this other stuff. But he's very real in the way that he views the game, the way he views his legacy, the way that he hates that word legacy, because it seems to be determined by everyone else instead of the one person that should be in control of that. So hearing him talk about, you know, double teams and all these different things, like the way he approaches the game, I just have an amazing amount of respect for his basketball brain. And he is a unique personality. Like there's no denying that. He is a guy that gets more flack than I think a lot of us would ever be able to handle if people were criticizing the way we do our jobs on a daily basis, the way they do with him. But his basketball mind and his love for the game, like he is very sincere in the fact that, like, I don't do this for any of you guys. I don't do this to build up my accolades or any of that. I do this because I just love this game of basketball.
Yeah. Actually, on this, did you listen to LeBron James and JJ Redick's the podcast, Mind Your Game?
I listened to part of it. I didn't get to finish it yet because of all the getting back to from the wedding and,
And
going back to my day grind. But I'm excited to listen to it.
Listening to a podcast while you're putting your kid to bed, just a thought, right? As some experience on my end, something to try, right? Like they're just they're a little bit restless, and you just kind of being there looking at them while you're listening to some good good podcast material. Not a bad way to go. However, LeBron James, he mentioned on that, like, and JJ Redick. I mean, both these guys, they're like basketball nuts, right? Like they love basketball so much. They breathe it. They love it. They've been playing for so many years. And he mentioned that the key to longevity to what he's done is discipline. And it goes into you're saying that, you know, to your family, to your friends that, hey, I can't hang out on this day. I got to go play basketball. I got to train. It's the days that where you're questioning yourself and you keep on going back in the gym. These are things that separate LeBron James from other people. And it feels like Kevin Durant has that pedigree as well. And also with that, I mean, I think of some of the things that some of his teammates have said is that he's so supportive. He's all about them. He's all about helping them reach their ceiling, their next level. And he's always willing to be a basketball teacher. It's just like some of these guys, especially with LeBron or Kevin Durant, they are wired a little bit differently than other people in the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting because he's not like your typical locker room leader, a guy that's going to, you know, make these rah-rah speeches and all this other type of stuff. But he is a guy that will pull people aside, will talk to them. And it's just a different form of leadership than what people are used to seeing, which is why people always get on him for it. And it's kind of a weird dynamic, but because he sets the tone, he leads by example. Like there's not a single person that we've talked to about Kevin Durant, coach, player, otherwise, who doesn't rave about his work ethic and the way that he attacks every individual drill at 100% speed. Like that is something that doesn't go unnoticed, and it sets the tone for the entire gym. So he is one of those guys that's just built differently, that every time he's in the gym, it's 110%, and guys follow suit because of it.
Did you see that meme but photo of Eminem, Dr. Dre, and Snoop Dogg recently?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, so for you, based off their personalities, of your big three in Phoenix, who is between, you know, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Kevin Durant, who is Snoop, who is Eminem, and who is Dr. Dre? And you got to think about the people that we're also talking about, the Hoopers, right? The rappers. Yeah. Like, how do they mesh together? What are some of the commonalities? I'll let you start, or I can go start if you want to, but
okay. Anyway,
go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I think we've got to go KD is Snoop for...
That's what I had to. Is it because he's so funny? He is so funny. When he wants
he's very
to be.
Funny.
Yeah.
He's very funny. He does enjoy getting high on occasion. I think that's that's up there.
Yeah.
And I think probably a lot smarter than people give them credit for.
Sure.
I would say that they have that in common too. Dre, man, that's tough. I think Dre would probably be Book.
Yeah.
That would be my thing. And I think M would probably be Bradley Beal, just because they are the more, I don't want to say eccentric, but they're the more out there personalities, and they can be very, very funny, but also very intelligent. So I think that's the three that I would go. And Dre is more like, there's just this aura about Dre. And I think Devin Booker has that, despite being more like reserved.
It's a bit of an alpha mentality. You know, he's from the Kobe school, right? That mama mentality of being, when you step on the court, whether your role is, you know, you're the eighth man or the fifth man or whatever, you're the starter, like you are the guy in your minutes. And his trajectory as well, like from where he was when he started with the Suns, as he went forward here, it's been a pretty cool journey that he's had. Like I remember during the playoffs last season, there was like an 8-game stretch where I was like, what am I watching? Like this guy is like hitting absolutely everything. He's averaging like, what, 38 points. This is all within an eight game stretch, 38 points. It's like 50% from three, 60% from the field. I'm like, this man has arrived. He's a really cool player. And obviously Eminem, Bradley Beal. I mean, because the other two fit so well, I feel like you just have to kind of go with Eminem and Bradley Beal. Or do you see something that's similar about them?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think they're both very underratedly funny. Like Bradley Beal's probably one of the funnier guys on the team.
But
he does smile. Eminem, not so much.
No.
Not so much for Eminem. But they're also very clever. Like Bradley Beal doesn't talk to us often in the media because I think he he uses the fact that we have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker to kind of duck out sometimes. But when he does talk to us, he gives some of the most thoughtful answers. And I feel like he's very selective with his word choice. And anybody who listens to Eminem knows that, like, some of the lyrics that he strings together, he does the same exact thing.
Yeah. Who talks the most between the three of them? Is it Kevin?
Probably KD, yeah, just because Book's missed more time this season. Yeah, so true. We probably talk to him the most.
You had a nice piece on Isaiah Thomas, who was signed to a 10-day contract with the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. Now, we got to factor in that Saben Lee and Frank Vogel's talked about this too, that it's kind of like you're giving him a look, and he kind of fits what the team needs, but they're expecting Saben to come back at some point. But I loved your piece, and I love hearing about IT's his mentality, like, and how he's been able to go from where he was, which was like a star in the making to some degree, and then going back to where, I mean, no one wants to sign me. And we remember that that video that he had of during summertime, I believe, where he was saying, you know, everyone's kind of, they've forgotten about me, they moved on from me, and he was crying. And I still think about that video every once in a while, especially when I see him. But he's got this 10-day. He signed in the game, you know, late in it, and yesterday he had one assist, he missed a field goal. But what are the chances that maybe he's not going to be with the Phoenix Suns, but do you trust his game at the NBA level? Put it that way.
It's tough for me to say because it's hard to root against a guy like that. Just hearing, I mean, he spoke to us for about 15 minutes at shoot around before the game yesterday, once the signing was official.
Sure.
And you're just hearing about a guy who at 5'9", last pick in the NBA draft, all he was ever asking for was a chance. Like he wanted, he's always been counted out. He's always been told you're too small, you're not going to make it to this level. You know, now you're too old, you're not going to make it back to the NBA. It's been 2 years since you were last in the league, basically. And he just continues to find a way to prove people wrong. And it's a combination of his skill sets, combination mm-hmm. of his personality, and just kind of his natural charisma. Like listening to the guy talk, he's very well spoken, and it, like I said, it's hard not to root for him for a guy like that. So I think it's tough because you look at this Suns team, it's a better, or at least it has bigger expectations than a lot of the last couple of teams that he signed with. Yeah. And he wasn't able to stick with a lot of those teams. Like the Suns could use a point guard, but he's not like a traditional point guard. He's a shot first, shot second, shot third kind of point guard. So I feel like it's mostly, Frank has said, like, he's not going to play very much. He's here for depth. He's here because Saben Lee on his two-way contract only has 4 games of eligibility left.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a depth piece, garbage time type guy. But it wouldn't surprise me if they sign him to a second 10-day and maybe give him a shot at some point. It's hard to say because at this point, the Suns really need to be focusing on ironing out their playoff rotation, which they really haven't been able to do for most of the year.
We're going to get to that too in just a second. I think of a quote from Tom Brady where he was on, he was golfing with Peyton Manning. And he's like, hey, when you get your chance, don't bleep it up. And that's what I did. And I wonder if he does get a chance that he can just show what he can do. I mean, he had the quote the other day. It was in your story. I feel like I'm better than I was at 25. And now he's 35, if I remember correctly. Now, sometimes that could be the cliche where someone who's kind of seasoned in their career, they say, I'm in the best shape of my life.
Right.
But he was letting it up in the G League. And I mean, some of the shots he's hitting, like these are quick trigger threes off of, minimal ball movement. It's like isolation, pull up threes. These are tough shots he's hitting. I wonder, like to your point, I mean, is he going to be able to do that when he gets that moment, if he gets that moment at the NBA level? I don't know. It's a fun story. I want to see him make it. And also in this NBA, he might have a better chance of doing it, I think, with the 5-out, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he was saying that he feels like this game is more strictly tailored now than it was 10 years ago to what he brings to the table.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at his G League numbers, yes, it's the G League. Yes, it was only 4 games, but he was getting up 14 threes a game and making like 45% of them.
Goodness.
14 threes a game.
Wow.
So he's like, yeah, if you're trying to get up threes right now in the NBA, I can help with that.
And yeah.
Again, the whole, I feel like I'm better now at 35 than I was at 25, maybe a bit inflated, but one of my co-hosts on our Suns podcast that we do has talked to someone close to IT's camp. And the one thing that they wanted to stress was that this is not like delusions of grandeur. He doesn't think he's going to go out there and average 25 a game. He knows his place, But he does feel like he can still contribute and play at a high level.
Yeah.
And that's something that IT was saying as well.
Moving on to the Phoenix Suns and where they are. So they are tied for eighth with the Mavericks record-wise, and both squads are 0.5 games behind the Kings for sixth. The sixth seed team likely faces the Timberwolves in the first round, I would think. Like, it seems like the Nuggets and OKC, they're going to be one or two in some capacity. And with the injuries that the Timberwolves are dealing with, not just with Cat, but with other people on their roster, it seems like they're probably going to be in that third spot. But there was a quote that Frank Vogel had yesterday where he said, "I challenge you guys to play more together. Let the past connect us." And you've been watching this team, obviously, all season. Why do you think he's saying that?
Yeah, so I think part of it was just coming off the Bucks loss that they had the other night. Like, one of the big things that he's stressed all season is make the extra pass.
Yeah.
Because there are games, quarters, possessions where it does devolve a little bit too heavy into like a playoff style of basketball where one of the big three, like, they target a switch and a mismatch, they go one-on-one, and everybody else just kind of stands around and watches.
Yeah.
Because, you know, statistically speaking, a Devin Booker mid-range against a mismatch, a KD ISO, those are good plays, but they're not necessarily built for the regular season. This team is much more built for playoff basketball when the possessions slow down, when every possession you're trying to target the weakest link defensively out there. So I think for now, like, you see the Suns, I think they're 18-3 or 19-3 now when they hit 30 assists. So, like, when they are moving the ball, when they are forcing defenses to rotate, when they're in their drive and kick game, they become very difficult to stop. And they're also a lot better when they get up at least 30, 35 threes than they are when they fail to hit that margin, which has happened more this season than it probably should.
Sure.
With the four shooters that they have out there. I mean, they're a top 10 team in three-point efficiency, bottom five in three-point attempts. Like, you've got to get up more threes in the modern NBA. And that's one of the struggles with having a big three that specializes in that mid-range is you got to get the ball moving, you got to make defenses rotate, and you got to kick out to open threes.
Yeah.
Because if you're just going ISO, guess what? Those are mid-range looks, very rarely at the rim, very rarely from three. So I think that's been a point of emphasis, is just trust the pass, keep making defenses rotate, make them actually work instead of just this one-on-one stuff too much.
And correct me if I'm wrong, they weren't always playing through Jusuf Nurkić the way they are now, right? That kind of changed over the course of the season. I think it was, I mean, if you do agree with me, it was because they realized that they had to find ways to get their three guys in Bradley Beal and Devin Booker and obviously Kevin Durant easier shots, because it's kind of similar to what we were talking about with Blake in the last segment, where the Clippers, like, they're going to be relying on their guys to be isolation fiends and James Harden to be unbelievable in the pick and roll. Well, you know, in today's basketball, you know, a 7-game series against like a team like the Nuggets, where, you know, you need to keep on evolving throughout a series, I challenge if the Clippers are going to be able to do that, but at least the Suns are realizing this now and they're making a bit of a switch.
Yeah, they want to play a more versatile brand of basketball, and they're realizing, like, if we have the ball in one of those three's hands, it's entirely possible to trap them and force the ball out of their hands.
Yep.
If we have it in Nurkic's hands, we can specialize with something that Bradley Beal is really good at, which is off-ball cutting backdoors. Nurk and KD have really good chemistry on a lot of those backdoor cuts as well. So getting them easier shots should always be the goal. I think this is a team that ranks, you know, top two in the league in terms of the number of shots they take that are very tightly contested, and they're like bottom two or three in the league in terms of wide open shots. So those numbers, they're not great.
Yeah.
It speaks to the shot making that this team has, but if you can play more than one way against defenses who are going to try to take those three away and get them easier looks in that way, like, that's a huge benefit come playoff time.
What's going on with Grayson Allen? Like, he's shooting 48% from three. And lately, like, it's on the season, it's five attempts. But lately, I'm seeing 15 last night, 11, 9, 5, 5, 4, 14, 12. And he's still shooting efficiently. Has he been tested for PEDs? Like, usually that happens at some point when a player's playing well.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think, you look at the number of wide open attempts they're getting, Grayson Allen is pretty much most of them. Yeah. Because when you have those three to account for, you got to leave somebody open. And a lot of times it's been Grayson, which is kind of crazy since he's like leading the league in 3-point percentage and has been for the majority of the year.
Yeah.
But he's just cashing in on the looks that are in front of him, to be honest. He's distinguished himself in that rarefied, like, Steph area where like every shot that that guy takes, you think it's going in. Like he's nowhere near the dribbler, pull-up shooter, just overall shooter that Steph is.
I got you.
But every shot that he takes, you're like, yeah, that should go in. And he's been invaluable. It's imperative that the Suns pay whatever luxury tax fees they have to bring him back this summer as a team that's in that second tax apron and doesn't have a lot of options to rebuild their roster this summer. So he's been great in a contract year, and I think he's a perfect fit alongside those big three in terms of the spacing that he provides, the shooting, being able to make defenses pay. If that holds up in the playoffs, that's going to bode really well for this team.
Contract years bring the best years. Ain't it true? I'm just kidding. He's done a great job this season. Why are they so bad in the fourth quarter? You want to help me understand this? Because just so everyone's clear, right? First quarter, second quarter, third quarter, they are third in net rating in all of those. But if you switched to the fourth quarter, they are 25th. Wow. With all these star players. Please, help me.
So it's a multitude of factors. I think one thing is that there have been fourth quarters where they've just been bad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it stems from the minutes. So like Devin Booker will play the entire first and third quarter. He'll sit out for the first 5 to 6 minutes of the second and the fourth. And for a lot of the year, Bradley Beal was out. So those stints at the beginning of the fourth quarter when he would sit for 4 or 6 minutes, it's just KD out there with a lot of bench guys. And those groups really, really struggled. You just throw two or three guys at KD, the rest of them could not help you at all. So that like tanked their net rating. By the time Devin Booker would come back in, they've already lost the net rating battle for the entire quarter, basically. Mm. Part of it, my dog is seeing some people out there. But I think part of it is also like they've led in a lot of games heading into the fourth quarter. And even with the big three, if you're up by like 15 to 20, the other team is going to make a run at some point. They're going to cut into that. It's the NBA. Like the three ball has playoffs made comebacks way more possible. Yeah. Like, and that has kind of tanked their net rating as well. Like even last night, they lost the fourth quarter, I think significantly because they were up like 24, 25 heading into the fourth.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where even when they win, their net rating is not getting better because a lot of times if they are winning, you know, they're able to coast to the finish line. And I think it's weird that this team is still so bad. When you look at the overall numbers, like they're one of the worst fourth quarter teams ever. Yeah. Since they started tracking fourth quarter
ratings,
which is wild, but I really can't account for it. It's one of those things that you hope come playoff time, they are able to put together a full 48 minutes. Cause like you said, through the first three quarters, they've been pretty solid.
Yeah, for sure. And like how they stagger Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, I guess all three of them, because they are so shallow with depth. It's really, really bad. And like they knew what they were signing up for when they signed these three guys, right? They knew that it was going to be difficult at various points. Shout out Thad Young. Love that he's found a new home with the Phoenix Suns. Loved him in Toronto as well. But even how they've used, you know, Bradley Beal, because to me, it seems like it should be him as point guard, and you would have Devin Booker and Kevin Durant off ball. You're getting them to their spots because those two are your best scorers. But it seems like it's more Devin Booker. Now, he can succeed, right? Like, there's no doubt about that. But I saw last game, he shot, one of six overall, 1 of 4 from three. He's a spot-up shooter. This is Bradley Beal. And I guess this is a Frank Vogel thing that he has to figure out.
Yeah, it's been an interesting dynamic. And I think they want to be able to play with all three of those guys initiating. Booker is probably the better playmaker and passer out of those three. But I do think there is something to having Bradley Beal, especially when those three are sharing the court, have the ball a little bit more than he has, because he's the only guy of those three that routinely gets downhill and gets to the rim and puts pressure on the basket in that way. And that, you know, that opens up the drive and kick game. Book and KD, when they're initiating offense, a lot of it is we're either going to have to get off the ball quickly because we're being doubled, or we're looking for our spots in the mid range. That's not exactly always conducive to the best ball movement. So I think they want to have a varied approach. They want to be able to say, we can do whichever of those three can start the offense. But I do think there needs to be a little bit more variety and a little bit more emphasis on Bradley Beal setting things up just to put those guys in easier spots too.
Thanks so much, man, for joining me. This was very fun. He's Gerald Bourget, Phoenix Sports. That's PHNX Sports. Thank you so much. Great chat with him. Great chatting with all of you. Wrapping up the show here. I'm your host, I'm with Man. The Raptor Show brought to you by Campbell's Chunky Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you subscribe to the Raptors podcast, Raptor Show podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Rate and review, of course. Thanks again to Will and Blake. And many thank yous to Derek Brandeo, Jennifer Rolnick, David Siss, and J.R. Manichat for helping out behind the scenes. We will see you tomorrow. Get an update on this media game. All right. Thank you.